Thank you for listening to this episode of Death by Architecture. If you haven't done so already, here's a quick reminder. Please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Your feedback and, of course, your 5-star ratings are greatly appreciated. If there is a true crime story in AEC that you think that I should cover, please feel free to email me at deathbyarcpod@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Escaping architecture school with your life was just the beginning. The profession is deadlier than you think. I'm Tennille, and this is Death by Architecture. Welcome to Death by Architecture, a podcast about true crime in the architectural, engineering, and construction community. Each episode, I will bring you a story about a crime committed in the AEC world. As a part two to the Women in Construction Week episode I did on Udi Hicks, listeners, if you haven't listened to part one, please stop and go back and give it a listen. But if you have, this week I'm joined by the awesome Letisa Kindred. Letisa is a 22-year member of IBEW Local Chapter Number 134, who currently teaches electricity to high school students. She serves on the board at Chicago Women in Trade, where she's the chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Thank you for joining me, Letisa.
Thank you so much, Letisa Kindred, for joining me. I'm so excited to do this interview, to talk about the story and shed some light to women in construction. It's Women in Construction Week, and it's an honor to have you join me. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I just wanted to start by saying, who are you? You know, where are you from? What's your background, your education? Tell me who you are.
Okay, my name is Letisa Kindred. I am a IBEW Local 134 electrician from Chicago, Illinois. I started the trade 25 years ago, September. I worked out in the field for 12 years straight before I went into the classroom and started teaching electricity to high school students in 2007. Since that time, I got more active with my local, with women's organizations. I'm a board member at Chicago Women in Trades. I was one of the co-founders of the Sisters of IBEW Local 134, our Women's Committee. And I've been really active in the women's labor movement here in Chicago.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. How did you get into the construction trade? Like, what made you say, this is what I want to do with my life?
So it wasn't like something I dreamed of. My mother at the time, she was a laborer. And she would come home dead tired and dirty. And my sister started laboring because my mother was. And I didn't want that. I didn't want to come home dirty and, you know, like them. So my mom, the electrician, started taking applications. My son was little, like two years old. And my mom, you know, she's like, oh, my God, the electricians, they look at the prints all day. They look up in the ceiling, you know, and they come home. They go home clean. That was her biggest thing. They go home clean and they're thinking all day and they're not just getting dirty all day. You should apply. So I applied and I was accepted. That's the gist of it. It wasn't anything that I'd ever dreamed of. I was, you know, a young mom and I was in school and I needed to be able to provide for my son. And I applied and I got in. And that's the gist of my getting into the trade.
And there's history right there. Isn't it funny? Yeah. I think we all do. We don't wake up and like, I'm going to be a woman in construction. Like, right. It just happens.
It definitely did just happen for me. There are women, though, that I, you know, I've met, I've taught, who this is something that they dream of. But I'm not one of those women.
Me either. So let's talk about, I just wanted to say for my listeners, if you didn't listen to part one about Udi Hicks, go back and listen to part one. It's the story of what happened and the trial. But so all my listeners, go back, stop right now, go back, listen to that, and then come back. But you didn't know Udi personally, and I heard it from a coworker. So how did you find out about what happened?
So, the last, since about 2014, 2015, I've been attending Women Build Nations conferences, and the trades women's community has just really flourished in that time. There are a lot of Facebook groups, and I saw it on Facebook. One of the women from California, she made, I think she's from Washington, but she posted it, and it was just like shocking. It was like, wow. It was for me. I had the same reaction to her murder as I did for Sandra Bland, because they were young Black women, and they could have been me. You know, it could have easily been me. Sandra Bland was a young woman from Chicago. I'm a young woman from Chicago. I know my voice. I know my rights. I would have spoken up. Udi Hicks was a young construction worker, and I know the trials and that I endured while a young woman in construction. So looking at her and hearing her story, I was able to see a lot of myself, and it was just hurtful. Yeah, hurtful to hear.
Did the case change your perspective about women in the labor community?
The case kind of strengthened the cause for advocacy for women in construction, because we have all, I can't say we've all, there are women who say they've never experienced harassment, and I've experienced, you know, good times on the job more mm-hmm. than I have bad times, but those bad times are the ones that stand out. And the bad times were all centered in sexual harassment, disrespects, and all the things that she endured on the job. Yeah, it just clarifies that even after 25 years since I started, that these issues still stand. And there are women who've been in the trade for 40 years that can say, even after 40 years, these issues still stand. And, you know, maybe it's time. It's been time. And other women in the past have tried to do things to change things. So with the community having grown so much, maybe we can actually effectively try and make a little dent in kind of putting an end to workplace harassment, violence, and everything else.
I hope so. I really do. You know, before we started recording, we spoke briefly about my situation, and I very rarely publicly talk about the sexual harassment that I endured at my job, which led to me losing my job, and then led to me, you know, subsequently having to sue the company for slandering me in public. But, you know, what do you think companies or workplaces can do to ensure that none of their employees go through that?
Companies could adopt policies, in the door policies, where the first thing that you do, just like with your safety training or whatever kind of new hire training there is, that there is a strong message against sexual harassment and workplace violence. And, you know, if you know that there's a line to toe, then you're going to toe that line when it comes to your employment. We can't turn a blind eye or make excuses for, you know, well, that's what we do, or this is what happens. And, you know, we got a bunch of guys here, or whatever excuses people like to make to justify disrespect, you know, of any kind.
Yeah.
Just train, start at the beginning. Start what do they say? The bottom up? Is that, how does it go? Whatever. You start, and you know that the lowest of the ranks understand. You know, everybody throughout the company needs to understand that this is our policy, and we are not tolerating harassment in the workplace. And they have to listen to those who have been harassed, who have endured unfair treatment, and I don't know, find some type of, be serious about change, first of all. Be diligent, be serious about making change, and then working with those who have been the victims of harassment and those things to find out where they went wrong. Where did we fail you? You know, have an exit interview. Is there something we could have done different? And just like we were talking before we got on about reviews, quarterly reviews, a review every other. Whenever you're doing these reviews, not only review the employee, review the employer as well. Make sure that we're doing the right thing. Make sure that there's no one feeling like they can't speak their voice. Because that's the thing. A lot of times in the workplace, we're afraid to speak up because the poor behavior is being overlooked or accepted. And if you speak up, then you become the bad guy. And you gotta shift that paradigm and make it a place that's safe and and respectful, and we're here to do the job, and that's it.
Do you think you deal with a lot of youths, right? You're a teacher. So do you think that American youths are aware of the challenges faced by minorities and women in the labor community?
I think, so my school is a predominantly Black school. It's 99.9%. And my kids are kind of sheltered in where they don't have to deal with anyone that's not like them. And some of them might leave and get a culture shock, or maybe they're not, you know. And I don't think, because our youth, especially now, they're extremely sheltered. They're very sheltered. They're naive about a lot of things. They don't go out and play here in Chicago the way we did. They don't, you know, they're not able to travel and go up and down the bus line or train line. They live in a box, honestly. So there's a lot of things that they're super naive about. So no, they're not aware. I know I try to every year do a sexual harassment prevention workshop with my students to at least put it on their radar. So when they go to school, when they go away to college, when they go to trade school, when they leave high school, that they're not surprised. They're not in a situation, young men, where, you know, we're in high school, the kids hug each other all day long. And to help them understand that it's okay for a woman to say that she doesn't want to hug. Let the young women understand that it's okay to tell somebody, nope, don't do that. Don't touch me. It's okay. And let the young men be aware that they have to be conscious of the fact that, no, everybody doesn't want to hug. You know, we don't want to be, we don't want to be at war with ourselves, you know. And if you can't do what you don't know, ignorance is abounds when you're 17, 18 years old. And unless you're given the tools to do better, you don't want those hard lessons. So I try to help them as much as I can so the lessons are not as hard as they could be if you're doing something just out of ignorance and not malice. Because though that exists too.
Yep.
And it can stain you and have you in a bad place for the rest of your life if you let it.
So how do you think that the youth perceive the labor community? And, you know, how much interest do you think that they have in getting into the field?
But some do. Like some kids, some of my students personally, when they've never touched the tool, they've never had the opportunity to work with their hands. And when they get the opportunity, they're like, oh, wow, I really like this. And that's the great thing about career and technical education is that we're able to give them an opportunity to just try and see if it's something that they even like. The labor community, they don't know a whole lot. Some of them, you know, you meet a kid here or there who has a family member who's in the trades. And so they have an idea of what it entails. But that is the beauty of teaching electricity to high school students, because, you know, every electrician, I've had so many people volunteer in my shop. They walk in like, I wish I would have had this when I was in high school. And the worst thing about the kids is that they take it for granted because they do have it. They think that this is like a given, that this is something that they shouldn't take advantage of. They don't always take advantage of it. But guess what? 6 months after high school, I get those calls. Ms. Kendrick, is that opportunity still open? No, it's not. And I have to show them how to apply on their own as opposed to an opportunity that was right there for them. And they chose not to. Their families are not real always trusting. You know, the history of Blacks in labor can be a tumultuous one. Unless you are a Black union member, there are other Black people who are not fond of labor unions because we haven't been welcome to them. So there are a lot of variables with young, you know, the youth and their perceptions of labor.
What advice? I think I just heard one that was like a good nugget of truth right there about taking the opportunity when it's in front of you. But what advice do you give to, you know, fresh graduates who are just getting ready to enter the labor community?
Take advantage of every opportunity that comes to them. And even like I have a young man in my class now, he knows he wants to be a dental hygienist. He's been saying this since last year. He's a senior now. And he's, you know, and his thing is he likes a nice smile, you know, and he says it really simply. And he's been accepted to a university, but he had been talking about going to junior college and he listens. So I appreciate conversations with him, even though he doesn't want to be an electrician, because he's listening. Save your money, go to junior college first, get really good grades, get a scholarship. And then when you go to a university, it won't hit you so hard, you know, financially. Mm-hmm. So any conversation I can have that can empower my students you know, just have them as informed as possible, whatever it is, you know, take advantage of every opportunity. If you don't want the best thing, so our local offers my students a trainee program, which is a pre-apprenticeship of sorts where they can go and work for a contractor and it doesn't have the responsibility of an apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. So the trainee program, you can go there and decide, yes, I want to be an electrician or no, this isn't for me. And I've had students do that where they go and they nah, this isn't for me. But their classmates went in and they're still in the trade. So it gives you an opportunity to just try it, know what you want, know that you have these options. And if you take advantage of every opportunity, somewhere along the way, you're going to find something that you like.
Agreed. Just try it. You never know.
You're not obligated to, and it pays, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, let's do the best we can by ourselves, by not limiting ourselves, by squandering opportunities.
So we would be remiss in not talking about, you know, COVID-19 and the global pandemic. Do you think that there'll be any issues of diversity in the labor community because of COVID-19? Have you seen any problems that women or minorities are facing in the workplace?
Well, you can't directly correlate the problems for women and minorities because at this point in time, there are a lot of people that are off work. Mm-hmm. But typically, like it's a standard that women and minorities, we're the first ones laid off anyway.
Right.
So when, you know, you're the first ones laid off and, you know, each union has a different way of dealing with these things. Our union has a book system. So the order that you're laid off should be the order that you go back to work. So there's a little bit of, you know, you have a little bit more leverage that way. But the numbers are always not necessarily even. If you're the first one laid off, then no, you were already laid off before COVID started. Or COVID made it so, you know, you may have worked through March and somebody else may have gotten the opportunity to work through June. So there are those disparities may be exaggerated by COVID. I don't know. I know people, women of all races who are laid off. Mm-hmm. I know there are women of all races who are working. So it's hard to really discern, you know, exactly how it's falling. But I'm sure those disparities exist because they existed before COVID.
Right. I think that obviously we'll know more as time goes on, and we're still kind of, you know, in the middle of it. I think we'll see on the other side of it, what the trends really were. So a lot of my listeners are architects, engineers, you know, they're in the office, they're not on the site. What can they do to prevent and address issues on diversity, inclusion, harassment?
First of all, the biggest issue is the elephant in the room. You know, we're pretending that these issues don't exist. Oh, if you just suck it up, then maybe, oh my God, this is who he is. This is what he does. Or, you know, and, you know, the kids, I learned that men can be sexually harassed just as women can. So there's no gender specific, even though women are experience a lot of workplace violence more so than men, but we have to be respectful of everyone. And whoever is in a position to set standards for behavior and expectations in the workplace when it comes to sexual harassment and workplace violence, if we have the new hires, we spoke about this earlier, new hires coming in and part of their training be a zero tolerance policy, right? Mm-hmm. If they know that this is not tolerated, you start from the bottom. And even like if there's some type of, and I think of a government mandated government mandate on sexual harassment, if you start that at the apprenticeship level and every apprentice has to go through this same training, 20 years from now, this will be less of a problem. Mm-hmm. If it's ingrained in you from your first days with the company, then 20 years from now, your company, these won't be issues. It's a standard. We set standards that promote change and unity, because the whole goal of any company, any contractor, is to make money. Right. And if you have a strong workforce where people feel good about coming to work and they don't have to worry, those worries alone take away from the value of the work that someone can do. Make it about success of the company. Make it where it starts at the beginning, in the door. This is what it is. This is our policy. This is the ILO, and I'm not sure what the ILO stands for, but it's the international organization. I've been doing a whole lot of research about policy. Mm-hmm. They have the groundwork, and each company or each industry could take it and tailor it to fit their industry. Is that there just has to be a genuine effort made to eradicate sexual harassment in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It takes somebody doing something.
Yes.
Be that one guy, like Vicky's program.
Yeah, and that's and then the one guy, like they're great guys in construction, right? The great guys outnumber the bad guys, but the bad guys leave such a nasty taste in your mouth. And so you that be that one guy, be those guys, because there are a bunch of them that sit back and see it like, oh my God, he's so wrong. But for some reason, they don't say anything. In 25 years, I can tell you the two guys that let everybody on the job know that I was going to be respected. Two guys in 25 years. So, and all those other times when there was nobody, guess who had to stand up for me? Me. So being that one guy, that is such an important thing. And being that one guy and you train those other guys to come up behind you or right. come stand with you. If you all take a stand together, then these problems won't exist.
Agreed. Yeah, and I'm going to talk to Vicky about Be That One Guy program and see what I can be doing, what we all could be doing to make sure that it's safe to go to work. You know, we spend more time in the workplace than we do with our families, and it should be safe. I shouldn't feel like it's not, you know, and that's unfortunate. So back to Udi. You know, I see the hashtag behind this is obviously a not a visual medium. So I'm not going to put our pictures up, but the hashtag We Are Udi Hicks. Tell me, what does that mean to you?
So back in 2017, the following Women Build Nations conference after she passed mm-hmm. was held in Chicago. And Chicago Women in Trade Diversity and Inclusion Committee, of which I was chairing at that point in time, we had our We Are Udi Hicks campaign. One of our members, this very same picture, she took the picture and she created a drawing of Udi, and she painted it. It had to be maybe 5 feet by 3.5 feet. Oh, and wow. It was wonderful. So when we took it to the conference, women from all over the country signed it. Hashtag I am Udi Hicks. We are Udi Hicks in workplace violence now. And we were able, that was the first fundraiser that was done for her. We sold bandanas and hard hat stickers, and we raised money to send to her sons. Mm. And the thing of it is, as a woman in the trades, there are some very awful stories. So when we heard her story, it hit home for so many of us. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't just about, you know, it was all of us. She, honestly, we are Udi Hicks. Anybody that has endured any kind of harassment in the workplace, we think of how fortunate we are that it wasn't us. Mm-hmm. And she paid the ultimate price, and she shouldn't have had to. And if we bring awareness by, you know, even just uttering her name, maybe, you know, we can make something easier for somebody in the future.
Yeah, I agree. Do you think that the sentence that he received was fair?
Not at all. It took too long. It took 3 years to convict him. 16. And when I hear these low sentences, I just block out whatever the heck it is, because it's like a slap in the face to her family, to her children. Yeah. At this point in time, she'd be a journeyman, and she'd be providing for her sons, and she'd be, you know, living her life and living in all that she deserved. But he took that from her. But he's able to maybe get out of jail someday. Like the sentence was not fair, and it wasn't just, mm-hmm. and it slap on the wrist. The best part about this campaign is the response of her family. Her son sent me an inbox thanking me for this. They thanked us. They sent pictures to let us know that it means something to them. Like it's bigger. It's so much bigger than, I don't know. Like I said, you can look at her and see yourself. I have a son. I have children that I can't imagine them having to endure what those young boys have gone through. And if there's something that this community can do, and we are doing, this tradeswomen's community, we are doing to let her family know that she won't be forgotten, that she won't be forgotten. Yeah. And to know that it means something to them, then it was the right thing to do. That it was definitely the right thing to do in 2017, when we did a really bang up job. That picture was perfect. And then, you know, we framed the picture and were able to send it to them so they would have it and see all of the support for their mother. So it makes it worth it. It makes it worth it.
How do we get involved? If somebody says, I want to do something, what can we do?
So the thing, we did this fundraiser through Silkworm. They're a printing shop out of downstate Illinois. If someone wants to get involved, do a campaign and make sure that the proceeds are donated to her son. That's the easiest thing, because as I said, their mother would be a journeyman now. I don't know, a scholarship fund. I don't know. Whatever anybody calls themselves doing in her name, make sure that her children benefit from it. And it's not just making a name for yourself or doing something, whatever. Make it truly about her and the legacy that she left when she was senselessly taken from this earth.
Yeah. So, gosh, this is so good. What are the next steps? What do we do
next
now?
Next step, best case scenario. And when we started this campaign in like the end of January, it went super fast. So we created the Sisters United Against Workplace Violence, and just talks. We have a Sparky Talk. Electricians in my local, we are on Zoom like every Friday night. And then, you know, there are a couple of women who are super active amongst electricians around the country. And I reached out to them because they have a wide network of women that they deal with. So just communicating with them and creating the Sisters United and trying to do the research to create our own best practices as tradeswomen. Who have endured some of these things that we're talking about. Like I said, there's a lot of information out there, and it's just a matter of collecting it and working to create our own best practices. And hopefully someday, best case scenario would be to present these best practices to locals in different trades and let them discern what they're able to do with it. But it can't be said that it doesn't exist, because it's out there. And if we can collectively put it together as it pertains to building trades in the United States of America, or in Chicago, or in LA, or wherever you are, and just have it available. So if anybody says, well, we don't know what to do, boom, here, we got some suggestions for you.
There you go.
That is the best case scenario goal. We just got to do the work to get it done.
Thank you so much for talking to me. You know, we're all busy. We're all dealing with our kids and pandemic and all the things. And I thank you so much for carving out some time to talk to me about UDI and to talk to me about what we could be doing better in construction. I really do appreciate it. So thanks so much.
Thank you for the time and opportunity.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Have a great one.
You too.
New episodes are released the first Tuesday of every month, so don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you like to listen. Also, you can follow me on Instagram @deathbyarchitecturepod.